This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And we're back in the saddle again.
Oh, no. Are we going on a trip?
No, it has nothing to do with horses. Okay. I apologize if I alarmed.
I'm not very good on horses.
I despise them.
Plus, hay gives me allergies, so it's just a bad deal all around.
Hey, diddle, diddle. Why are my eyes so itchy? No, we're back, though. We're here.
We were here last week, Sam.
Yeah.
So.
True. I guess I haven't gone anywhere.
We are still back. Yeah, we haven't gone anywhere. It's been
Jason,
general life.
This week at work, people mentioned how your voice is different when you do the podcast.
My voice is different all the time.
How do you feel about that?
I completely agree.
Okay. I think it sounds like mine does, too. But I don't know for sure. I know that I act more professional, or I talk more professional for about a third of this show when we're not goofing off.
It just depends.
Anyway, none of that has anything to do with what we're doing. I've just had that in my head all week. What we're going to do...
And you didn't want to bring that up just earlier.
No,
in the
I wanted to do it...
In the show.
On the hey diddle diddle.
Oh,
I
no.
wanted to get the cat with the fiddle. I wanted to watch that cow jump over the moon. So I had posted it earlier, last week or this week, on Twitter that the subject for this week's episode is something that I've had on my mind for many months now, but I've never been sure if there was enough there to do an episode.
So it's not Wolfman or Poltergeist.
No.
Or aliens, because there's clearly enough there for multiple episodes.
Always enough there. No, but you know what I decided as well is, as I think I mentioned it last week, I know for the patrons, I may have mentioned it during the normal show, I'm back in school. I'm going to school for the first time in 3 years. And I've realized that there are some weeks where we're just going to have to take a chance on stuff. And there might be a lot there, there might not be, and we're just going to see how it turns out. Thankfully... Now, looking at this in retrospect, I think it turned out fine. I hope you'll all agree. This week's subject is one that, fittingly enough, is of an indeterminate origin, okay? That's to say, we don't know how long people have been experiencing this, but according to the lay people traveling through the Santa Lucia Mountains in coastal central California, is that where you're from?
No.
No?
Well... I know what mountain range you're talking about, but I'm not from there, no.
Okay, all right. Have you been there?
Yeah.
Very cool.
You go over them in order to get to the beach.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm from the valley, bro.
Okay.
Guess what's on two sides of a valley?
The ocean?
Mountains.
Mountains.
Mountains. Yeah, that's what creates a valley.
According to your people, then, or people adjacent to your people, there is something in the Santa Lucia mountain range. It's something that goes by the very good name of the Dark Watchers.
Oh, that's interesting.
Does that ring any bells?
No.
Dang.
No. Sorry.
I don't know. I really wanted it to be that, like, as I was doing this, you were like, oh my God, yeah, I do know what that's for, like, because...
So, is this the same mountain range that the Pacific Coast Trail runs along?
Yes.
Nice.
Pretty sure. Nice.
So, do we have some traveler accounts at all?
We do have accounts here that we're going to get into, but not for a minute
the
here.
The Dark Watchers.
So it's the Dark Watchers, okay?
Do they live in the Dark Towers?
The Dark Watchers on the Dark Towers. Okay, so the Dark Watchers. Theoretically, some people claim that they can be traced all the way back to the Native American legends of the area since before... the arrival of the white man. But I'd like to remind everybody that especially in the Western United States, this is often stated, but not always the honest case. Take, for example, the Bear Lake Monster down near the border of Utah and Idaho.
You mean that fib?
Yeah, exactly. Very famous monster. Very, when you go, everybody tells you about it. In reality, it was a lie invented by Mormon newspapermen and then erroneously credited to the local indigenous people who had preceded their Utah settlements. Now, in the case of the Watchers, however, the stories are supposedly given a birthplace in the folklore of the Chumash tribe, which has historically inhabited the area of the Santa Lucia Mountains. Now, the Dark Watchers themselves. Jason, I know you didn't look at these notes, because you told me you didn't look at these notes.
Yeah, I did.
You said
that was fine.
Yeah, I did say that's fine. I'm not trying to shame you.
I had 110% intention.
You have a lot to do. You're moving houses, you're cleaning things, you're fine. If I say the words Dark Watchers, what does this, what are you imagining? What are you picturing in your mind?
Fantasy armor and knights of evil. Okay. Dark paladins. That's why.
That's fair.
Death knights.
And that's pretty cool. Like, you're not wrong.
That's like, yeah. That's what I'm imagining.
Well, that's fair. I didn't
the Witch give King you... and whatnot, the whole nine yards. That's what I think of the Dark Watchers.
The Nazgul?
Yeah.
Wicked. No, you're wrong.
It's not nearly that cool, is it?
No.
Are
I wish
wraiths
shades more like it. See, so essentially what a Dark Watcher is at its core.
So are shades just more hip and cool wraiths? Is that what they are? What's a shade?
As far as I understand it, well, let me tell you what the Dark Watcher is,
okay,
and then we'll get into that distinction.
All right.
Okay, so the Dark Watcher is essentially a shadow of a person.
Of a man?
Or a woman, or a freakish animal. We'll get into all of it. But essentially a person or a shadow that is seen standing on the mountain at midday or in broad daylight.
Ah, so like Peter Pan's shadow before he stitched back onto his feet.
Kind of exactly that, yeah. Which is, as we're going to talk about here in a few minutes, also identifiable with a phenomena known as the shadow people, which we've never really covered on the show. Because I don't even like to talk about them, because they're probably listening right now.
Nah, dude, they're nothing. I'm sorry, but
I hope nothing. So. I hope so, but I don't think you're right. So, but basically, the shadow people typically appear at nighttime in dark rooms anyway, stuff like that. These are just humanoid shadows that stand on the mountain in broad daylight. And as they stand there, they are silent and they are still. They don't move. They don't make a noise. They are a silent sentinel. And while at first glance they may appear to be human, closer examination always reveals that there seems to be something wrong with them. Now, the difference...
That's so mean. There's nothing wrong with
they're
them.
They're beautiful just how they are. The difference, I would say, between a shade and a wraith, and I don't know for sure, but a shade I think of as a very two-dimensional object. Mm-hmm. Like it's literally just like the outline of something.
Okay.
Which is what these are. However, I don't know if that's always historically accurate, but I don't think of them as having like faces and components to them and individuality. Whereas the wraiths,
two dimensional.
Yeah. Got wraiths, I think of as a more fleshed out
three-dimensional
being, yeah,
object. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
I could be completely wrong.
That's
in
also
fact,
fair.
I'm going to take the leap
sense
here. I probably am wrong. That's just how I think of it.
Okay.
Now, of course, it's no strange thing to see a shadow at night or even in the noonday sun, given there's
something
to... It
is strange seeing a shadow at night.
Why?
Because there's no sun.
There's like street lamps and things, and there's moonlight.
There's street lamps up in the mountains.
There's moons.
Okay.
One of them.
Yes. Anything I can do to derail this,
thanks,
I will.
Thanks, bud. But... To see something just in the middle of the day without, theoretically, without anything casting it, right? That's the thing, is typically when the Dark Watchers are seen, it's not like a lot of paranormal activity wherein
surprise,
you...
Surprise, surprise, shadows made by objects.
Right. You don't see, it's not like through trees or even rocks or things like that. It's typically just standing there. Not necessarily painted on and curving with the earth like shadows usually do. That ain't weird.
That's completely normal. That's fine.
It is. It is weird. So there is adequate folklore for the Dark Watchers, but I want to talk about the idea of them being supplanted from ancient indigenous belief first.
Okay.
Because it is most likely not the whole truth, but it is also not entirely without its merit. See, in 1974, there was a doctoral dissertation that was published by a man by the name of Thomas Blackburn, which worked as
an... Why does that name sound familiar?
I don't know.
Should we know it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Thomas Blackburn. That sounds familiar, though, right?
No.
No? Just me? Okay.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like a freaking barkeep out of a fantasy novel with your dark paladins and all this.
Ah, yes.
I'm Mr. Blackburn. I'll have no roughhousing in this pub. God! And then your powers awaken and you burn him into ash. That's what it sounds like.
Wow.
Yes.
That escalated quickly.
Thank you.
A lot of shadows from that, won't we?
Shadow of Mordor. So,
no, Shadow of Blackburn.
This dissertation worked as an archival compilation and analysis of 111 oral narratives collected between 1912 and 1928 by an ethnologist by the name of John Peabody Harrington. It is essentially the standard for Chumash folklore, and while it lacks a perfect match to the description of the Watchers as human shadows watching silently in the mountains, it does offer us something that might be a little closer to some of the more interesting reports of the Watchers themselves. See, the Chumash spoke of creatures called... Also, really quick, I'm going to probably do this the entire episode. Does that sound familiar, the Chumash?
No.
No? Really? Huh. Well, I know they're there because I did research on that, but how far are you from this mountain range?
Probably a couple hour drive.
Okay, that makes sense. You wouldn't necessarily know that. Anyway, so the Chumash spoke of creatures called the Nunasis. Now, in the cosmological order of their belief, reality was made up of three different areas.
And actually, for reference, in like elementary school, we mostly learned of like the native tribes in the Sierra Nevadas, not coastal.
Not the other side.
Yeah.
Because is the Sierra Nevadas more eastern?
It's the east side of California.
Anything cool happen there?
Not particularly.
Sand dunes?
No.
There's no sand dunes?
Not in my neck of the woods, no. Hmm. Sorry, dude.
That sucks.
I know. Sand dunes are fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, learn that one.
No good desert is caught dead without them. Now, in the cosmological order of the Chumash belief system, reality was made up of three different areas. There was the upper world, which is what we would know today as everything above us, up in the sky and outer space. The middle world, wherein we all live and spend our time.
You mean Middle Earth?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
More like Midgard, which is actually an island surrounded on all sides by water, which I think is how the Norse, right? Because they talk about an ocean that encircles the earth. And I'm pretty sure that's
the world serpent.
Well, the Midgard serpent is in the waters, in the ocean that encircles the earth. Anyway, I'm pretty sure that's what that is. So the middle world, where we all spend our time. And finally, the lower world, an unseen realm somehow beside us or below us. Now, this should not be a foreign concept to most of us. It lines up pretty well with what we think of anyway in religious and mythological thought.
But, yeah, we're not very creative, are we?
Well, there's that argument, or there's the argument that there is some underlying universal truth that comes out in the similarities and the stories and legends of cultures that have never met and will never meet. Who's to say?
Yeah, we're not very creative.
Anyway, these Nunasis, they were denizens of the lower world, which would come up to the middle world in the night in order to spread evil, illness, and bad luck. They could shapeshift and could appear as monstrous or misshapen beings, or else they would appear as humans if they had the desire. Now, these Nunasis, these are the closest link we have to the Dark Watchers in the Chumash folklore, and even then, this idea of evil creatures coming up, first off, it says specifically in the nighttime, and they're misshapen and they're shapeshifters and this and that. It's a far cry from Jimmy saw a freestanding shadow today on the mountain of a man.
Yeah, that's a little bit different scenario.
And so therefore it is probably just one of those times that people were racist. They're like, the old beliefs, ancient, mystical. Yeah, anyway, so this is not, however, to say that there's no pedigree to the Watchers in folklore. One weird thing that you experience a lot in the modern era that you probably didn't have as much of back then without the internet is that people just make up folklore all the time. They just go online and they lie about a creature or something.
Yeah.
And anybody can make up any story. And
that's how creepypastas happen.
Exactly, creepypastas.
That's just the modern rendition of it.
Yeah.
It's the same exact idea.
Exactly. And so
previously they were to tell a story and have a moral and stuff like that usually to them.
Yeah, nowadays they're just to mess you up.
Yeah. Yep, and they do.
Yeah.
And they do.
So the nice thing about the Dark Watchers, though, is that we know that this is not a modern invention of the internet. This is not something that was born on a web form.
Is it a modern retelling of the same story then, or is it completely different? Or is it all just identical, uniform?
It's all the Dark Watchers. Yeah, it's all uniform back through time. See, what we see is we do have accounts from early Spanish
missionaries.
Sort of
conquistadors,
basically explorers. So I don't know if the missionaries were the first explorers or what, but
explorers with swords.
Yes, sword explorers.
Guns.
That's not anything. Early
Dora the sword explorer.
You had to say sword explorer.
That's
the entire point of Dora the Explorer. Dora the Explorer, you madman.
I was really focused on the beginning part
you
of that word.
Psycho. So yes, Spanish explorers,
okay,
and also Mexican ranchers, as time went on. There are accounts in their accounts of these things, but they dubbed them Los Vigilantes Oscuros, which is literally just the Dark Watchers in Spanish. So translated, that's where their name comes from. Los Vigilantes. Now, as bizarre as this may sound, it's not a far stretch to say that it's most likely true. See, the Watchers are a phenomena which predate the 20th century most likely, and their origins at this point are impossible to find the genesis of. But we can find early references to them, and one of the most well-known references or referencers would be the Nobel Prize-winning the Nobel Prize-winning author John Steinbeck, whom I will never forgive for making that book of Mice and Men.
What? The Poor Little Rabbits?
I want to see him, George.
All right, let's move past this.
Oh my God. Okay, so yes, he's a monster, but in his short story, Flight, Steinbeck, who was born and raised in California, describes a character by the name of Pepe being cautioned by his mother after he kills a man and has to escape into the mountains. His mother says, quote, "When thou comest to the high mountains, if thou seest any of the dark watching men, go not near to them, nor try to speak to them." Unquote. I don't know why Pepe's mother talks like that.
Yeah, yeah.
The story was published in 1928.
What time frame does it take place
I
in?
Have no idea, but okay. It was published in 1928, and even then, that's, I don't think of really anyone after 1850 saying those sorts of things.
She's an old soul, Sam.
Think about in the Civil War, thou must go to the front.
No.
Slayeth thy brother against thy brother.
Yeah,
see,
you're right.
It doesn't seem
right.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
So,
also, I mean, in the 1920s, I feel like it's a lot easier to get away with murder.
Oh, sure. You had all those jazz parties.
Yeah.
People died all the time.
From jazz. It is a smooth criminal.
It is the greatest evil we have ever known. Now, I digress. I was wrong.
You digest?
I'd like to just acknowledge I'm wrong. Now, sure enough, Pepe, in his flight to escape the police, he enters the mountains. And while there, he encounters these dark watching men. Quote, Pepe looked up to the top of the next dry, withered ridge. He saw a dark form against the sky, a man's figure standing on top of a rock. And he glanced away quickly, not to appear curious. When a moment later he looked up again, the figure was gone. Pepe looked suspiciously back every minute or so, and his eyes sought the top of the ridges ahead. Once on a white barren spur, he saw a black figure for a moment, but he looked quickly away, for it was one of the Dark Watchers. No one knew who the Watchers were nor where they lived, but it was better to ignore them and never to show interest in them. They did not bother one who stayed on the trail and minded his own business, unquote. What do you think? Do you think so I have a future in audiobook guardians? Narration?
Oh, is that...
I'm
sorry, I was following the content.
That's fine.
Not the delivery.
I thought I did pretty good.
You did fine.
Thanks. We're going to talk...
Just swell.
About it, about what they are here in a moment. But right now, we're trying to establish the legitimacy of their claim on the area, I would say.
Yeah. Let me just say this, Sam.
Okay.
You'll start recording audiobooks as soon as I start getting a Vicks commercial.
Nice. Vicks Vapor Rub. Use it. Peons? I don't know. That's probably not the slogan they want. Now, another native of the area, the renowned poet Robertson Jeffers. Ever hear of him? No?
Nope.
Okay. Apparently, he lives in your neck of the woods. So,
California is a big place, man.
It's the size of Japan, someone once told me. I can't remember who, though. He is remembered for his narrative poetry and environmental works. He mentions the Watchers explicitly around the same time. I think it's actually 1928 as well. Now, get ready for some recitation here, okay? I'm going to recite this
poem. What about restitution?
I will give you no restitution.
Oh, okay.
And this is a free program, so no one can accuse me of not giving them their money back. So, quote, "But when he approached the fall of the hill towards Howrens, he saw apparently a person on the verge, outlined against the darkening commissure of the further hills, intently gazing into the valley. The young man's tired and dulled mind, bred in these hills, taught in the city, reverted easily towards his dead childhood. He thought it might be one of the Watchers, who are often seen in this length of coast range, forms that look human to human eyes, but certainly are not human. They come from behind ridges and watch, but when he approached it, he recognized the shabby clothes and pale hair, and even the averted forehead and the concave line from the eye to the jaw, so that he was not surprised when the figure turning towards him in the quiet twilight showed his own face. Then it melted and merged into the shadows beyond it. The young man thought it heavily that in his state of mind and body, hallucination was not surprising." Unquote.
There's a lot of marijuana up in them hills.
There's gold up in those hills.
And green.
Green gold. Now, in this account, we see the story of a young man who sees what he believes to be one of the Watchers, but it is in fact his own shocking reflection. However, it is clear that the Watchers were well known to both of the authors at this point, and some have pointed out that these writers were known to use their own life experiences in their work, most notably Steinbeck, whose novel East of Eden is based on his own family history in the area.
So wait a second. Did he murder someone?
Parts of it. Not all of it. His mother did not say to him, "If thou seest the dark man..."
How are you sure?
Well, that's fair. See, and here's actually exactly that. In fact, we know that at least some part of this is biographical. Although it may not be the sightings of the creature itself, and hopefully not the the murder, but most likely the warning of Pepe's mother. Although, again, hopefully not in old-timey speak. See, Steinbeck had a few children. One of them was named Thomas and took up his father's mantle as a storyteller. Now, Thomas passed away in 2016, regretfully, but before he did, he collaborated with an artist by the name of Benjamin Brody to create a tome by the name of In Search of the Dark Watchers, Landscapes and Lore of Big Sur. Now, it serves as a collection of stunning landscapes of the area of Big Sur, wherein the Santa Lucia Mountains reside, as well as notes on the area and its folklore provided by Thomas Steinbeck. Now, the two of them conceptualized this project after Steinbeck told stories related to him by his grandmother, Olive Hamilton Steinbeck, who was the mother of John. Now, Olive told her grandchildren that she had left offerings of fruits and nuts to the Dark Watchers in the mountains, and upon her return found that the offering had been accepted, and returned with it beautiful shells and feathers. See, what's interesting is on both of these, you don't really have, like, you have an account of people in the mountains who are always dark and shadowy, but it's not necessarily paranormal or supernatural.
They generally just look like you.
They're just mountain folk.
Yeah.
Them hill folk.
Mm-hmm.
But as we move on through time, and theoretically back in time as well, because the interesting thing is there's not a whole lot of literary precedence for the Watchers before this. 1928 is about the earliest that we have it written down and mass published, that there's something in them there hills. But there's, you'd think that for them both to publish the same thing around the same time, that they would have another like common origin, but there's, as far as we can tell, there's not one. So that common source for the both of them is gone, and it really seems to be simply that it's the folklore of the area, and then by some sort of coincidence, the two of them decided to publish literary works referencing the Watchers around the same time. However, it would appear that young John Steinbeck most likely had been told experiences from his mother's childhood, which would have been in the later half of the 19th century when she had her own experiences. She claimed to have seen the Watchers and interacted with the Watchers, but that it was separate. She did not like see the Watcher and go to them and be like, here's some nuts. And they were like, howdy dee, thank you. Here's a shell. That's an equitable exchange, my friend.
Oh my goodness.
So,
because who'd have thought you bring nuts into the forest and they vanish?
Give nuts to the shadow men. It'll keep you safe.
No, we'll just
until the morning.
Turn them into shells.
When the night comes. Wait,
in
no.
the morning when the night comes?
My bad.
Sam, just stop. Just stop.
Now.
It's too late now.
Fair. Now, in their collaborative work, Brody and Steinbeck put forth a theory of their own regarding the Watchers. They reference a concept that originated, or at least was formally named and codified, in the classical Roman religion. And this concept is that of the genius loci. Now, the genius, yes, genius, like very smart, but different. It's spelled the same, but it means a different thing. And what this genius means is the individual aspect of the divine, which is tied to a place, a person, or a thing. When we think of them in our modern day terms, we might call them things like guardian angels, but they were more than that, not for the least of which is that less concrete, more abstract concepts, as in the idea of the Roman Empire itself, were also granted a genius loci. As the empire progressed, after the reign of the Emperor Augustus, the emperor himself would become the genius of the empire, granting him yet another otherworldly aspect. But the genius loci is more of the spirit or place of a thing rather than its guardian in the literal sense. And in this case, the Dark Watchers then would essentially be a natural manifestation of the mountain itself. They simply live there. This is their place. It's not necessarily a guarding, because to guard you would have to interact.
They're tethered to it.
But they're tethered to it. They cannot escape. Oh God, all is lost.
Do we know if they even want to leave, though?
I wouldn't think so.
Right.
Because they don't do anything.
Yeah, they don't.
They just stand there. They're kind of like a weeping angel in that regard.
Aww. Hmm. She should just weep in the shower where no one knows.
Thank you, Jason.
Hey, it works for me. What?
Now, for us to imply that the dark...
Why is the pain?
For us to imply that the Dark Watchers have a standardization of appearance, however, would be, to be frank, just misleading. See, even Steinbeck's mother referred to them, like I was saying, not as what we know them to be now, which are just these dark human shapes, but she referred to them as people. like fully fleshed out people. And not just that, but little people. Leprechauns is the exact terminology that was used.
They've got smashed.
What?
You take a fully fleshed out leprechaun and you smash them and squish them and they become a normal sized humanoid. Shade?
Sure. You take the thickness and add it to the height. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I just disagree that that's a valid way of doing things. Anyway, so yeah, all of Hamilton Steinbeck and a lot of people actually around that time, it seems, thought of the Dark Watchers as little people, leprechauns, like the small feet, the baby feet that we talked about. Smallfoot is not that. That's that new movie with Channing Tatum about Bigfoot. I'm sure it's going to be bad.
What?
You haven't seen the previews for this?
Maybe I have.
It's like, it opens with like a story, a guy like climbing a mountain, telling a story about the scariest thing he's ever seen. And it's like a Yeti pops up and he screams and then it, but the camera cuts and it's the Yeti telling the story because he's terrified of the human being who they call a Smallfoot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either going to be awesome or really bad. Probably really bad.
Is it DreamWorks or Pixar?
I think it's DreamWorks. It's so definitely not Pixar.
Yeah.
They're more serious than that. And this, I'm going to move forward now. That's okay. Unless you have anything to say about the Channing Tatum movie Smallfoot?
No. No, okay. I'm good.
You good? This comparison with a leprechaun is most likely due to his own family history, as Olive's father, who was a man named Samuel Hamilton, was an Irish immigrant who moved to California in 49 to follow the gold rush. Now, Olive was born, raised, and died in California, but it wouldn't be a far stretch for the local lores and stories that she had known of to be synthesized with Irish lore to create this idea of leprechauns in the New World. This is definitely not to imply that there are not accounts of little people in the Americas, but it is only during this time period that it seems that people refer to them as the little people, or a smaller race. As we move forward, we see them not only grow to normal size, but far, far surpass that.
That's kind of cool. The Gold Rush brought a mixing of cultural influences.
Back in the good old days.
The folklore of that region.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
That is cool. That's how folklore works.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
It was a periodic influx of that folklore. It was hip, you know?
It was a phase.
It was a phase.
Hip to think of the leprechauns. Leprechauns were really hot back then. No, you're completely right. And I completely agree with what you're saying.
Hate you.
The beautiful interwoven tapestry of human belief is gorgeous. Everyone.
Okay, let's keep going.
Okay. They're stealing my lucky charms.
Oh man, I saw a great meme the other day.
Okay.
That was someone had a picture of Trix the cereal.
Okay.
And it had, because they're all circles now, right? They're all just like normal balls. They're all normal puff balls.
What?
Yeah. And he's like,
disgusting.
And they're like, back in my day, Trix actually had shapes. And then someone posted right below that, maybe it's just because you're not a kid anymore. And I was like, whoa! Because Trix are for kids.
Trix are for kids. We're going to change this whole episode. We're going to delete everything we just recorded.
And
we're going to talk about that for an hour.
How Trix change their shape to become more easily produced. But in reality, it's because we're now adults and tricks are for kids.
Yeah. Bizarre. Anyway, here we are back again.
On my own.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to. Anyway. Okay, so, but the other source, right, that we have is Robertson. Robinson Jeffers, Mr. Jeffers, as it were.
That was the poet, right?
Yes. Now he states.
So we have two literary sources.
Yes.
Okay. Do we have anything else? What else we got?
What else would we have? Like a photograph? That's not how these things work.
Not back in the 19th century. No, I was just curious, like historians or folk experts. But we're using literary.
Yeah.
Okay.
John Steinbeck.
Okay.
And Robinson Jeffers, Mr. Jeffers, who states that there is something inhuman about these shapes. Remember, he says, to human eyes, they appear human, but they are, in fact, anything but human.
Well, yeah, but we personify everything.
Sure. Should we just shut the episode down?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
We're done. We personify everything. We look for patterns and everything. Goodbye.
If we go by the shapes themselves, it precludes the possibility of it simply being other people, even dark mountain people that are doing this. See, the problem is, of course, that no one can ever seem to get a good look at the Watchers themselves. Some more modern accounts indicate that the Watchers have a peculiar sensitivity to plastics and metal, refusing to be in the presence of a more modern high-tech hiker, or one specifically searching to catalog their existence. Jason, you look incredulous.
I mean, I don't like plastics either, but being wary of metal? What?
I think it's just a good way to explain why they can't be detected or photographed or anything.
Oh, it's a cop-out.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But instead, the Watchers reveal themselves to solitary individuals who, like them, embody the spirit of the true mountain hiker. See,
so the crazy folk.
Yes. Hello!
Oh, God. Sam, why?
It's me, Mountain Man MacGuffin. I saw the Dark Watchers.
Sam, that's not how people sound.
They made me a sandwich.
Sam, that's not how people sound.
I married one of them. We had a lovely life together. I spent 62 beautiful years in that place, and then in a blink of an eye, it was over. And I was back to where I had started, much like Captain Jean-Luc Picard in that episode of Star Trek.
Are you done?
It's me! Anyway, that was my...
Captain Jean-Luc Picard!
Jean-Luc Picard! I'm okay. Not a starship captain after all. That's also another episode of Star Trek. It's amazing how diverse and well just thought out every episode of Star Trek is in that any possible situation is an episode from Star Trek. It's quite astounding.
That's great, Sam.
I want to delete this podcast.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Let's reel it on back, shall we? Take a breath. All right. That coffee made me sleepy. When I get sleepy, I get weird. So.
All right. Let's try this again.
In a goofy kind of way.
See, the shadows aren't just the forms of humans. They're the forms of humans wearing wide-brimmed hats and carrying walking sticks.
So, like, sombreros?
Maybe? Sure, yeah, actually. Okay. I think that's fair.
That's fair? Is that a decent enough...
But bleak? Black, dark sombreros of the void. A void sombrero.
I want one of those. It's
kind of like an urban sombrero. Yeah, so... They look like old-timey hiker people.
So they have adapted through the ages, is what you're telling me.
No.
From leprechauns to sombrero-wielding
hikers. It really was just Olive Hamilton Steinbeck who said they were leprechauns.
Okay.
Everyone else agreed that they were pretty much just people who wore sombreros and walking sticks in the mountains that were very dark people. With no faces or other identifying features other than their very broad shoulders. However, just because we're referencing two authors from 1928, don't let that make you think that the Dark Watchers don't exist to this day. See, one of the most well-known accounts is that of a Monterey Peninsula high school principal who had gone hiking with a group through the mountains. And as they moved, the man became increasingly aware of the feeling of being watched. This was in the 1950s. He's increasingly aware of being watched, and as he feels this in the back of his neck, the hairs start to bristle, he turns around and looks instinctively up towards a higher elevation wherein he sees a figure standing silently with a clear outline of a hat, a long cape, and a walking stick. Now, as he calls out to the other hikers, perhaps to bring their attention to the strange person appearing to study them, he took his eyes off of the shape for just a moment, and when he attempted to find it again, it had vanished completely.
That's it.
Okay.
I want to go camping. I'm going to find one of these things.
Go camping in the mountains.
They're not even like real mountains.
It says the Santa Lucia mountain range.
They're not that tall, though.
Are our mountains better?
Yes.
Nice. Nice. Take that, California. We got better mountains.
Sierra Nevadas are pretty cool.
Huh.
Except they're on fire.
Mac OS Sierra? Mac OS High Sierra.
Because they're on fire.
On fire. Burning. Our hearts and minds and thoughts and prayers go out to that entire state, which is on fire.
Dude, it's the whole West Coast.
The entire coast,
which is on fire. It's pretty much all of the U.S., besides for a few states.
To the United States, which is burning to the ground as we speak, in many ways. Hello. So this also, then, is a typical aspect of the Dark Watchers. You only see them once. You're walking around, you do your thing, you look over, oh, there's a Dark Watcher, oh my gosh, and then you look away, and then you look back, and it's gone. Okay.
It's almost like it was never even there.
No, no, that's not fair. Because if you stop, if you have the wherewithal to see it and then stop and be like, wait a second here, what's that going on? What's going on over there? They don't disappear as you're looking at them. So you can stand there and you can watch it and you can study it for as closely as you'd like, for as long as you'd like, so long as you don't scan on with your eyes and move away. And this is the reason why some of the descriptions of the Watchers can seem so disparate at times. See, without a proper opportunity to study an object, if you do just scan it and look back, we can't give a detailed account of it. However, some people claim that they have had the opportunity to study the Watchers more closely. And in the observation, they do indeed look less normal than one might think. While many accounts of the Watchers do look human, some of them, they include details like misshapen, twisted figures on the mountain. And the majority of accounts claim that these Watchers are actually quite tall, between 7 and 10 feet high. These shadowy giants have terrifying forms for those who can focus on them for long enough. One individual stated that he was baffled by what he saw because it didn't look to be like a human. This is probably the scariest thing I've ever said on this show, so I hope you can all brace yourselves. He said it looked like a horse standing on two legs, using a walking stick to balance itself.
Oh, poor Bojack.
That makes me want to throw up and die. You know my fears. Animals standing on two legs. Horses. Horses standing on two legs is something I had not even imagined.
It's perfect. It's the perfect evil.
I'm seriously going to scream just thinking about it.
Okay, Sam, stop thinking about it. I hate you so much.
I'm just here to break Jason's ears today.
And everyone else's.
Yeah, sorry, guys. It'll mix down. It'll be fine. Now,
we'll fix it in post.
We'll fix it in post. Another witness, this one calling himself Brian, gave this account. Quote, "We were coming home to the San Juan Bautista Hollister side when we saw a very large dark figure standing at the edge of the mountains, which is extremely weird since I've never seen anyone cross over the barbed wire fence, and I travel that road daily and at all hours. We drove by it slowly behind the figure, noticing it staring off into the distant valleys and mountains. It appeared to have a large cape with straight shoulders that were very broad. It seemed to have a hunch on its back, and at a distance, and at first, from a distance, I thought it was a condor, but when I got closer, it stood almost 10 feet tall. It did not notice us driving behind it, but we found a spot on the cliffy road to turn around and get a better look at it, and when we did, it was gone." Now, another account is that of a woman who went by the name of Nancy, who as a young person went into the mountains with some friends in order to have a stargazing party.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to look at something. Marijuana. I'm going to stare at it. That's how you get high, right? Just looking at it?
Sure.
I'm going to murder you. I'm going to murder myself. Okay. Can't kill me if I kill myself first. Now, as they settled into their car to sleep after partying a bit, one of the friends suddenly sounded very frightened, saying that they were surrounded. Nancy was confused, and as she looked out the window,
the shrooms will do to you.
She claims that she saw what appeared to be large beings, great large beings, 15 feet tall, wearing long black capes and wide brim hats and bending.
Are we sure it's just not like a League of Zorros?
15 foot tall Zorros?
Yeah, dude.
That's like something out of a comic book.
Sounds awesome, right?
Mega Zorro versus Mega Godzilla. Except Mega Godzilla is much higher than that.
You mean he's like Mega Godzilla?
No, I mean Mega Godzilla. Look it up. Don't look it up. I might be wrong.
Mega Godzilla.
I'm pretty sure Mega Godzilla is a thing, actually.
Here's what I found on the web for Mega Godzilla.
What do you find?
Mecha Godzilla.
Damn. Okay, well, anyway, Mecha, Mega, and Godzilla himself, they are all very much taller than 15 feet, and therefore would have annihilated Mega Zorro if the two had ever fought.
But if there was 15 of them.
Well, that's true.
15 Mega Zorros.
At 15 feet tall. It's 150, carry the 5.
It just might be an even match.
That's 225 feet of Zorro, my friend.
They all stand on each other's heads.
And then if you extend the tip of the rapier, I'm sure the rapier is like another 40 feet by itself, right? So like, yeah. Yeah, I think you
can do
it.
Did you just Voltron with Zorros?
Yes.
All right.
Hello. So back to this very spooky story, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Nancy claims that these 15-foot-high entities were leaning over, bending down, and looking into the car.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. She didn't see any face.
But it didn't have eyes. It's just...
Yeah, exactly.
How did I know it's looking there?
Well, so here's the cool thing. You have this thing called a head that has a front and a back, and I just pantomimed the opposites. Damn it! My good point is gone. A front and a back. And if the front of your head is pointing towards something, you're probably looking into it or at it.
But we can't tell what's the front or the back.
Sure you can. You just have to believe.
We're assuming it has the same anatomy as
us. So you're thinking that this giant 15-foot-tall being is bending down right by the car and looking in the opposite direction into the woods, into the nothingness. Yeah, why wouldn't they look in the car?
Who says that's its head?
Because it's still the shape of a human, kind of. I mean, it's humanoid shaped.
I think you're making a lot of assumptions here.
What else is it going to be, a goiter?
Sure. Why not?
You're right. I'm bringing my own bias into things again. My bad. Nancy decided to get out of there just like I wish I could.
Wait. She's safe in a vehicle.
Yes.
Things are looking into the vehicle.
Yes.
She leaves the vehicle.
No. That's not what I said at all. Okay.
She says she gets out of there.
Out of there. The mountains.
Oh, okay.
She drives her vehicle through one of these dark shadows.
This is just like Jurassic Park where the T-Rex gets out.
It's quite exactly like that, actually.
Into the outhouse thinking that he's going to get out of there.
But then he gets eaten.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's why you just don't leave kids in a car by themselves.
True.
Or at least roll down the window for them.
Yep. That way the T-Rex can get his little finger in there. She drives through one of these beings. And as she looks through her rearview mirror, they're all gone.
Does it seem like a substance at all? It's not like she's driving through smoke?
No, she just
whoop,
right through.
Right, okay.
Yep.
All right, darn. Visually, that's not nearly as fun.
No, it's not. Yeah. Like, if this was a movie, I agree, but this is a person's life. Some
Dementor stuff right there.
Oh no, my headphones are dying.
They just beep at you?
Yes, they did.
Why aren't you hard plugged in?
I am hardwired, but they still, because they've got the noise canceling. Whatever, if they die, they die. Now, another witness, though, trying to convey the impossibility of the beings, stated that in early 2008, he was hiking in the mountains, quote, I was hiking up a remote trail up the 33 in Ojai. I was about an hour up the mountain. No people, no cars in sight. As I was hiking, I had this eerie feeling that I was being watched.
Probably a cougar.
I looked up at the top of the mountain. It was a black figure. I waved jokingly, not really thinking that the object was a person. It waved back. Thinking I was maybe tripping or that a tree was waving in the wind, I took a puff of my cigarette, only to see the figure blow out a plume of smoke as well. I started seeing it flowing, and I say flowing, almost floating vertically. I ran like hell back to my car, spraining my knee in the process. So I would say in this scenario,
I clearly went to the wrong mountains.
The one most likely to vape is the Dark Watcher.
Is
plumes of smoke.
Did we just come full circle? Is this real? Oh, God, I hate you so much.
I actually didn't even think of that when we were doing which one vapes earlier. That's something for the patrons. So there you go. Yes. Now, another common motif of the Dark Watchers is that the beings are seen in places that no one could possibly be. And this is where the bit of witness testimony comes in, as not an insignificant amount of the people who have witnessed the Watchers are people who have spent a large amount of time in the mountains, specifically in these mountains, gaining experiences in hiking and mountain climbing. And one of these individuals is a man named Joey, a psychopathic man who likes to run marathons through mountains. I can't imagine that. That sounds like hell. Sounds terrible.
So wait, is that the reason why he's psychopathic?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought he was also loony.
He's running a marathon through a mountain.
That sounds beautiful.
Sure, at a leisurely pace where you're not feeling like you're gonna die. I can't walk up a mountain. I could never run a marathon up a mountain.
I mean, we can get you there.
No. Now, this is what Joey says. Quote, time of day. He's very, like, official.
Meticulous.
Quote, time of day was 2 p.m. Running up in an area where no human could climb without gear, I saw a black figure in plain daylight. Never seen anything like it in the mountain.
Stop.
Darker than dark. Could not explain it. A year passed. And again, January 24th, I saw it again, and in the same exact spot. All of the fake gasping aside, there it is interesting.
Yeah, it's absolutely interesting.
Creepy. It is weird. But what are they? See, so far as we know, the Watchers don't interact with people. They hardly move, if at all, and all of Hamilton Steinbeck's story of trading with them is really the only indication that they ever move or do anything at all. Now, the interesting thing is that especially in accounts not focusing on any sort of physical deformity, just mentioning the wide-brim hat and the cloaked appearance, the Watchers actually resemble another well-known entity. Now, we haven't spoken in depth on the Shadow People of this show, or on this show, although I'm sure that one day we will. However, simply put, they are shadowy individuals. But instead of appearing on mountainsides at a distance, they show up at the foot of your bed or the corner of a room. However, they are usually malevolent, or at least they send off malevolent vibes. But the Dark Watchers just stand there. You don't feel anything from them. However, while many shadow people are nondescript voids, vaguely humanoid in appearance, particular, and most likely the most famous of the bunch, is known as the Hat Man, for the obvious reason that he appears to be wearing a wide-brim hat and a cloak.
Can we not be more original? The Hat Man, he wears a wide-brim hat and also wears a cloak.
He has no face. He has no face and no other defining characteristics. What should we call him?
I don't...
Jeff? That's Jeff again, showing up in your bedroom, watching you sleep. Don't open your eyes. It's Jeff.
Maybe not Jeff.
Who's that shadow? It's Jeff. Ding! It's like the new girl thing.
I was following. It wasn't that funny.
I thought it was great.
That's great. I'm happy for you.
However, Jason, I'm going to give you one guess.
About Jeff?
About the shadow people. What what phenomena do you think they are most associated with?
What phenomena? Infrasound.
Damn, that's a good one. What other one?
I'm going to go with electronic interference of some
no,
sort.
No. It's like one that we've covered a million times on this show.
Demons.
It happened to you once.
Oh. It's the thingy when you... sleep paralysis.
Sleep paralysis. Yeah. Thank you. Infrasound as well, though.
Yeah.
Which is another big culprit for the Santa Lucia, the mountains.
Oh, yeah. It's the vibrations of your eyes that make you see shadows in the corners of them. It's actually really freaking terrifying.
Spooky. But yeah, so sleep paralysis is most commonly associated with the shadow people, and sleep paralysis does not happen to an individual as they are walking around mountains in the middle of the day. Right?
Usually not.
Usually not.
No. Unless you're a sleepwalker, I guess. I don't know.
Sure. However, there is another paranormal being that could be matched very well to the Dark Watchers.
I wonder if there's a study on that. Sleep paralysis and sleepwalking. I wonder if you can only do one.
Well, I would think so.
Well, sleep paralysis, you just wake up. It has to be. Because your body is sending the chemicals to essentially do the paralysis bit to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I must know more. Must learn Google all. It. I will.
And then tell us next week.
Probably won't. I'll forget.
That's fine. There is another paranormal being, however, that can be matched to the Dark Watchers even more perfectly. Albeit this one is a bit more active. And this is... the Big Gray Man of Ben MacDoy, also known simply as the Gray Man, which is another one I've been wanting to talk about, but there's really not enough there, and so I just figured we'd slip it in here. See, this is a being that supposedly resides around the peak of Ben MacDoy, or Dewey, in Scotland, which is the second highest peak of the British Isles, and the first highest peak in my heart.
How happy did that just make you?
I love Scotland.
Okay.
I hate this trash country. Get me out of this terrible hemisphere and send me back, please. Just kidding. I love America. Anyway, so the first reported sighting of the Gray Man was in 1889, the first recorded sighting of the Gray Man was in 1889, although it was not a sighting, per se, and it was not reported to the public until 1925. And even then, the locals had known about the being for decades before that. But the encounter was between the Gray Man and the famous mountaineer, J. Norman Colley.
Was he famous before or after meeting the Gray Man?
Before. Because he was famous, it gave credence to the legend. Now, he described hearing the sounds of footsteps other than his own around the peak of Ben MacDoy. He claimed that he would hear one step and then take two or three of his own and then hear another step from behind him, significantly closer, as if whatever it was had a gait that was four or five times longer than his. He wheeled about to see what was stalking him, but the mist made it impossible to see. And as the footsteps continued, he suddenly decided...
Why are you walking on a misty mountain? It's gotta be slippery. That's gotta be dangerous.
Over the misty mountains old.
I walked right into that one.
Two caverns deep and dungeons old. We must away... ere break of day, to reclaim our long-forgotten gold. You're lucky, because I don't know the other verses. I would have, though.
Oh, man.
You can't say those two words around me without launching me into Hobbit song.
It's like Beetlejuice.
Dwarf song, I guess. Beetlejuice?
Yeah. Say three times. It's good.
I know. That's why I was trying to prompt you into saying it a third time.
Nope.
Dang. Did you ever watch Community?
Yeah.
So in that show, they like spread it out over three or four seasons, but they ended up saying it three times over the course of four seasons. And the third time they said it, he just walked by in the background.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What season was that?
I don't know. I think it was season four. I don't know. I'll find like a link to it.
I have to do this.
It's truly amazing. Cool. So as he wheeled about to see what was stalking him, he could not, because it was far too misty on the mountain.
Not doing it again. You put a word in between those two.
I know.
You're safe.
Now, as the footsteps continued, he suddenly decided that maybe it wasn't his best idea to face whatever this thing was head on, and he began to run as best he could over the course of a few miles until the sound finally stopped. Actual sightings of the Gray Man are few and far between, but in 1943, a man by the name of Alexander Tawinin was walking about the mountain as a giant gray figure appeared in front of him, materializing out of the mist, standing about 3 meters high. The description is very similar to the Dark Watchers. There's no real features. There's no face. There's no third dimension to it. It's simply this giant shape. Yeah. And the two individuals stared at each other for a moment until suddenly the mist man began charging towards Tenwin. Now, he drew his pistol and fired it at the being, but it did not seem to create any impact whatsoever. And so Tenwin turned tail and ran for his haggis-loving life. However, and while I hate to play the skeptic on this one, and I would like to say that just because we can explain some of this doesn't mean we can explain all of it, there is a very easy explanation for the Gray Man, as well as potentially for the Dark Watchers themselves.
Oh no, Sam. But why?
But why?
Why would you do this?
See, in 1791, there was a poet by the name of James Hogg who was tending sheep on Ben McDwoy, when out of nowhere, this huge black or gray being standing at 30 foot tall appeared and menaced the man, who fled as fast as he could, leaving the sheep behind. However, the next day he returned to collect his sheep, and instead of the giant leaving through the night, he appeared to be standing right where he was, right in the same, pretty much the same area. And the shepherd realized as he moved that the giant was moving in tandem with him, until finally he rose up to take off his hat, and the giant did the same. And in that point, Mr. Hogg realized that it was simply that the sun was to his back, and a misty canvas was to his front, and it was his own shadow that was reflecting back at him. This is a phenomenon known as a Brocken specter, or a mountain specter, and it has been posited as the most plausible explanation for the Dark Watchers, as well as the Gray Man of Ben McDwoy.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, because we're talking about a coastal mountain range, where the fog and the mist rolls in pretty frequently.
Yes, yes. But
so you did my job for me.
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
I assumed you would have read the notes.
Ah,
I wasn't actually really going to bring it up. I was going to say, what do you think,
and
Jason?
That's all,
and kind of give you the pass of being like, here, Jason, say something. If you'll remember, right, there was that story from the modern day of the person who waved at it and it waved back, and he took a cigarette, and the shadow man blew out a big old nasty vape cloud right at the same time. And it's this sort of thing that makes it likely to explain a good amount of it.
Yeah, it doesn't really explain the wide-brimmed hat, people.
Doesn't explain the hat, and it doesn't explain the 15-foot-high giant in the dark that's bending down to look into the car. But it does explain, I would say, 90% of it. And really, here on Not Alone, which is the name of our podcast, because I almost just said two other different podcast names. Wow. Here on Not Alone, we're only interested in the 10% that you can't explain anyway, so. Although I'm sure we could find some explanation. Like I said, infrasound, that's another big one. Do you know if there's anything that would cause infrasound in a mountain? Like a naturally occurring infrasound?
If there's something underground rumbling. If there's like an underground stream causing vibrations. All sound is just vibrations.
That reminds me of this meme I saw, and it it's Bernie Sanders in front of Congress, and he's got like a white sheet of paper, and he's pointing to it, and the paper says, "Music is just wiggly air." It's
ain't
true.
Wrong. Ain't wrong. It's all vibrations. Otherwise, I don't know, some weird electromagnetism stuff. Essentially, our eyes, our senses are just really bad observatory instruments. We have far superior options available to us now.
Like the iPhone 10 camera with portrait mode.
Hey.
Apple, get at us.
I hate you.
We could be the perfect sponsors. Or we could, you could be the perfect sponsors for us. You could pay us twice. Anyway. Hello. It is I. Lost what I was thinking about. Yeah, so this explains the majority of Dark Watcher sightings to a T. Jason's taking off his headphones and walking away.
No, I'm staying.
Oh, cool. Okay. You just need to get those puppies out of there.
Yeah.
You'll even notice, right, there's this weird traditional idea that the Watchers won't appear to you if you're all gussied up in fancy high-tech stuff. They prefer to appear to people in hats with walking sticks. And what are they? Don't like plastic. No, they don't like metal.
You're right.
So most likely it is that the people wearing hats and walking sticks are seeing the people wearing hats and walking sticks because...
And are dehydrated because they don't have those really cool filter straws.
True. Because it is their shadow, their reflection. Now, I will be fair and say that if you Google pictures of Broken Spectres or Brocken Spectres, however it's said, they're very cool, but they do not necessarily constitute a solid form the same way that the Watchers seem to. When you're looking objectively, it's very easy to be like, well, that's just a shadow of something. But if you're in the moment and your heart starts racing and your adrenaline pumps up and everything catches into shape, I mean, it could be easily mistaken. And the same sort of thing. You're standing
there.
Especially
if you catch it out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah, yeah. You catch it out of the corner of your eyes, you freeze, it freezes, no one's moving, and then you walk away, the lighting changes or whatever, and suddenly it's gone or it's disappeared. I would say that it matches it fairly well. However, there is still a part of me that says it seems like there's something more there. But unfortunately, good stories of the Watchers are hard to find. So
because they don't come down off the mountains. Yeah?
True.
You gotta go to them.
True. So that's what I got. What do you think, Jace?
It's a cool bit of folklore, but I'm not gonna be too terrified about going into any mountains.
Now,
not from that. I'm more afraid of real things like
Goatman.
Cougars and bears.
Sasquatch.
In Poison Ivy.
Batsquatch?
What?
Oh, we could do Batsquatch. We haven't done that before.
I'm more afraid of like crocodiles in the lakes than I am of Batsquatch.
Well, you shouldn't be because Batsquatch is much more versatile and can cover more distance in a shorter amount of time.
Is it a flying bat?
It's Batsquatch. It's exactly what you think it is.
Not real? Okay. Good. Anyway. It's a hybrid, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
The perfect killing machine.
Man, bear, pig?
Sharknado.
Sharknado. The last one. Yeah, that's it. That's the Dark Watchers. It is a bit of folklore, but there's enough. And, you know, folklore comes from many roots, not the least of which is things that people see but can't explain. So we'll leave it with that. I hope you're not listening in the middle of the night. I promise. No one looking in through your window.
It'd be so much better if you are.
Right now. Don't open your eyes.
A gaslit lantern or something.
It's the Mad Gasser. Cool. That's all I've got.
Throw some marshmallows, huh?
Jason?
What? Throw some marshmallows. I want to go camping.
I don't want to roast a marshmallow over a gas lantern.
I mean,
it sounds bad.
Why not both? Have one sitting around and campfire. Fair. I want more campfire. For some reason, I want more smoke inhalation.
Hots. Okay. Cool.
I actually don't.
Yeah, please don't. So we'd like to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and thank the person who left us a review this
week. Nice. Is it a weird name?
No, it's Christina B143.
Okay.
So not that weird of a name. I actually really enjoy this review.
You paused so hard right there. So
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what was going on.
Here's the review.
Uh-oh.
5 stars. Delicious. As far as cooking shows go, this one is tops. The recipes and cooking instructions help make every day in every way a better for the old family to come home to. The hosts are great with letting you in the door on some of the more secret flavors that... Oh, shoot. Yeah, my bad. This show is cool, too. I looked through your comment history, ChristinaB143, and you do this to every show. In fact, we're going to go ahead and we're going to read some more of these.
Oh, my goodness.
So, one of my absolute favorite shows, The Adventure Zone, which I have been listening to nonstop, catching up, which is a D&D podcast. This was their review. Finally, I've found a show for a guy like me. I've looked and looked, but this is the first of its kind, and it's long overdue. It was a little weird at first, a little bit uneasy, but then boom. Interpretive dance for men with underlying palsy. I don't have to hide anymore. I can be me. It's true, spandex isn't for everyone, but I now have the confidence to don my true skin for the world to see. Thanks for... Wait, what show is this? Oh, wrong one, I guess. A fun show for sure. So that was that one. And then our good friends over at the Scientist podcast, Yorga the Best, they say, I can't tell you how much yoga has made a difference in my life. It's given me health benefits far beyond regular exercise. My flexibility has returned to my life, and it's like I'm 16 again. Along with the healthy eating advice and professional opinions on body type, I... Wait, this isn't that... No bad show? No way. Sorry, they're cool too. So I'll tell you what, I'm on to you. Also,
keep it up.
I truly enjoy that. You can also just apparently click someone's names on the iTunes
and just
desktop app
reviews.
And find all their reviews. So whenever someone leaves us a bad one, I check it to see if they're just miserable old bastards who are never happy. And guess what? They usually are.
Just more internet trolls? Yes. Yep.
So... Thank you for that. I really did enjoy your review. I read it like 2 or 3 times and was like, wait, what are you saying to me? And then other than that, we have a few patrons that we'd like to thank this week as well. So we would like to thank, I can't remember who, what's the date? The 28th. So we had to have done that one. So, okay. We'd like to thank Andrea Schneider.
Yeah, Andrea.
We'd like to thank Anna. Wow. Anna Wasiluska. All right, Anna. If I said that wrong, please feel free to email me a correction. We'd like to thank Christopher Kano.
Thanks, Christopher. Chris.
And we'd like to thank the Mad Scientist podcast. Woo, man. Chris. All right, Marie. These two. Who I think they were before, and then like, I don't know, I think they like changed their billing information or something. But anyway, guys, thank you so much, all of you, for being our patrons. It keeps the lights on. In fact, we now have
three lights.
I didn't even plan that.
It truly just happened this way.
Wow. And if we get more sponsors next week, I'll turn on that lamp
right
in the corner.
There.
Yep. So guys, thanks so much. If you want to learn more about becoming a patron, you can go to I always do this. You can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. Other than that, guys, you can find me on Twitter. I'm Beerlord Elfbane.
And I'm Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. You can find us on Twitter at Not Alone Pod. You can find us on Facebook at the Not Alone Podcast and also our Facebook fan group. Cool friend page. Remember, we are not alone, a community for the strange. You could. The pure of heart can find us on Instagram.
The vigilant,
the pious man who kneels before God. These are Indiana Jones references.
Okay.
Deep cuts. Other than that, you can email us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com. We love all the feedback you've got. We'll be back next week with some spooky ghosts or
finally,
something.
Back to what we're good at.
Yeah, we'll see. Probably
we'll
not.
We'll see.
Anyway, I did it last week.
Yes. Remember, whether you're spotting a shadowy figure in the hills behind you, or you realize it's yourself in the mist, you are not alone.